Thank you so much. So this presentation is based on the dissertation research that she just mentioned. And I'm really glad Dr. Meyerson went right before me because, as you'll see, a lot of the work that they're doing really plays into some of the work that I'm doing as well. I should point out that, so as a white heterosexual female, I really took on this research as an outsider. And so it's just important to keep that in mind when you think about how I approach this research and my interpretation of findings and my experiences. But I'm also incredibly grateful for the pastors and churches and lay congregation members who welcomed me into their churches and really helped this be a really great learning experience for me. I have no relationships to disclose. So as many of you probably know, young black MSM and really black men in general are disproportionately affected by HIV right now. And we see that in Milwaukee. So between 2000 and 2011, cases of HIV among young black men ages 13 to 29 tripled. Meanwhile, for white and Hispanic MSM, young MSM, that stayed relatively stable. So now in Milwaukee, we see that young black MSM account for about 71% of all new HIV diagnoses among black MSM, compared to what's about 50% nationwide. So now our median age of HIV diagnoses for black MSM is 24 years old. And we see these, again, across the country, and it's prompted a call for interventions that are sort of innovative, that build on community resources, that are tapping into sort of some of these untapped resources. And one of the suggestions has been working with the black church. And the research on the role of the black church in HIV prevention is sort of falls into these two parallel lines of research and literature. On the one hand, the church is an ideal institution. They have great organizational assets and leaders. They have a centuries-long history of providing health and social and support services. But at the same time, there are a number of barriers. One is just a general lack of resources, a lack of time, a lack of money. We often ask and expect churches to respond to any number of community issues, violence, diabetes, anything. And so this is just sort of another thing that we've asked churches to do. But then there's also this faith-related stigma and homonegativity. And we know that stigma and homonegativity are among the greatest impediments to HIV prevention, especially to addressing the racial disparities in HIV. And so these two lines of research have sort of necessitated further exploration of sort of the capacity for the church to get involved in HIV prevention, and also to look at young black MSM themselves to determine whether or not they even want HIV prevention services within churches. So this research looks at both of those, but I'm just looking at one aspect of that. So I'm really going to look at this second aim today, exploring sort of those messages and norms around homosexuality within the black church based on interviews with pastors of inner city black churches. So this is based on 21 interviews of African-American male pastors. We recruited them either directly through relationships with faith-based organizations, and then we also asked pastors to refer other pastors who had very similar views to them, but also asked them to refer pastors who might have very different views and approaches to them. So that way we had some diversity based on denomination, whether or not they were participating in HIV prevention services already, age of pastor, things like that. So here are just some sample characteristics, and as you can see, we have a pretty good range of pastor age, years as a pastor, education level, and congregation size. The majority of the pastors noted that about 100%, most of them said like 99.9% of their congregation members were African American, and they also had a good mix of either adult populations or families or younger people who are involved in the church as well. And these are the four themes that I'm going to focus on. And I'll start with homosexuality and religiosity. And I'm just going to give you sort of a brief overview of some of the pastors' views on homosexuality within the church. And this first quote I'm going to present sort of, I think, captures the crux of one of the tensions between sexuality and religion for many of the participants in the study. He said, "It's It is difficult and it is challenging because homosexuality is a sin, but it's so basic to who that individual believes they are. That's what makes it difficult. Just as an example, if someone steals, they know that's wrong, and there's no question about that. They can separate that, and they can understand that. But for homosexuality, I would say again, clearly I believe it is a sin, but the person who is homosexual or gay, they believe that is who they are. I don't want to say stigma as much as a very difficult thing within the church, because the person really believes this is who I am, and the church says that's wrong. And so their challenge then is to figure out how to reconcile this tension, right? Because if someone believes that this is inherently part of who I am, but the church unapologetically says, but what you think you are is a sin, that creates really some tension, and it causes us to question sort of whether or not these two things can be sort of worked out together. And although many of the pastors who participated sort of had a similar view like this, they also were very clear that these weren't their opinions. It wasn't my opinion that homosexuality was a sin, but this is the Word of God. We believe as Christians that the Bible and the Word of God is the absolute authority and standard for all life. We all might have our opinions, but what does God say? So when it comes to the issue of sex and sexuality, there are a lot of question marks. I don't have the right to have an opinion as a minister of the gospel or as a Christian. The final word comes from God. And in some senses, this can be viewed as an excuse or a justification, right? Because you can't call me homophobic or tell me that I'm intolerant. It's not my opinion. But one of the dangers of that is that then your congregation members, including young men in the church, also believe that that's not your opinion, but it's this higher order, higher law that just is. And that can be really challenging to address when we're talking about how to address stigma that young men might feel. And it can have really detrimental effects for someone who's struggling with their identity, especially in that younger age, and can lead to sort of an internalization of the homonegativity. And of course, these negative views often lead to stigma. And they acknowledge that there was a stigma. There are individuals in African-American churches who I know struggle to come out, and that's clear in many instances. Again, I think the stigma is there in so many ways with the community as a whole. The trick is, again, the message of balance. To what degree do we accept but still maintain integrity of messages when it comes to the Bible? And one of the things that a lot of the pastors said was, there are messages in the Bible about love and acceptance of all people, and these are my brothers and sisters. And there are also messages about homosexuality being a sin. And so how do I balance those in my messages to the members of my congregation and just internally? And pastors really openly acknowledge that they struggled with that themselves and trying to figure that out and how to balance that. And similarly, another pastor explained, we do place stigma upon homosexuality. You know, there has not been a lot of conversation on it, and as long as we continue to sweep it under the rug, I think that stigma will always exist. Now, I think in an unspoken sort of way, people accept it, because although that person has not openly come out and said, I'm gay, I've seen instances where that person is accepted and loved by the congregation. It's sort of that person's way of saying, well, look, we haven't talked about it, but hey, I love you, and let's not talk about it. And that's the bad part. The bad part is that unspoken language that says, let's not talk about it. Maybe it should be talked about. And so there was an acknowledgement that it can be problematic to sweep things under the rug and not talk about it. And we also have to think about the idea that things should not be talked about can be really damaging, again, to young people who feel like maybe you love me, but you only love me if I sort of hide part of who I am. And you'll see that come up again and again throughout some of these quotes. The second theme is this idea of love the sinner, hate the sin. And although pastors overwhelmingly had sort of negative views on homosexuality or views that people might say were homophobic, for example, and that's not all that surprising, right, given what we know about very traditional Christian doctrine and biblical hermeneutics. But they were also very clear that even though this was a sin, we don't hate these individuals. I say this with no disrespect to anyone, but I do not condone homosexuality, nor do I condone lesbianism. That's the predominant where HIV is coming through. Now, not saying I say that really, because the Bible tells me that it's wrong. Do we hate people? No, we are not haters. We are lovers. We just do not want to condone an unrighteous practice that my Bible tells me, so that's it. So I don't condone it, but we don't hate people because of their sexual orientation. Now I love you, my sister. I love you, my brother. But hey, I'm not going to be condoning of the sins that you are involving yourself in. And so again, he makes clear that this isn't his view, but he's just the messenger of these biblical passages. And this next pastor sort of says some of the same things. I'm not going to read through this one specifically, but he sort of points out where he thinks this is coming from. He says that, you know, part of the issue is that that African Americans in general have experienced unfair treatment and have championed a number of civil rights causes. And so because of that, they're not interested or more prone to hating the sinner necessarily. And this leads to this idea of acceptance by the church. And all of these pastors, almost all of them, believe that they were really accepting. As long as gay congregation members' behavior coincide with the decorum that we have in our worship services, they are welcome. What do you mean by that? Well, sometimes people like to come out and say who they are and what they are. I don't practice that here, you know. If you have a friend, fine. You come and worship and go about your business. But parading them around and introducing them, no, 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 not here. I wouldn't put anyone out of the congregation who wants to be part of the congregation, but I will not allow anyone to disrupt the congregation. I don't condone same-sex relationships. And again, we probably would have them in our congregation so long as they don't parade themselves. They are welcome here, I guess, for lack of a better word, as long as they stay in their place. And so there was this idea that churches felt like pastors really believed they were welcoming. But that welcoming was sort of conditional on this idea that you kind of have to stay quiet. And what does that do to a young person who's sort of struggling with their sexuality, or to an adult for that matter? And this pastor as well acknowledged that there's this fear that if the church is welcoming, that they might be seen as condoning of homosexuality. And he acknowledged, really, that this is an unfounded fear, that if we are welcoming, gays will sort of affect and infect our mission. And so the last theme that I wanted to focus on was the role of the church in HIV prevention. So what does this really mean, given what we know about the stigma? Pastors really wanted to be involved in HIV prevention, especially once they knew about the racial disparities and the age disparities. So what do you view as your role in addressing HIV within your congregation? That is a profound question and my most profound challenge, because there's no way I will not have to address that in some way before I close my ministry. AIDS does not have to be a death sentence, and we can respond as a congregation in ways on both ends, toward the healing of people's illness, toward saving people's lives. And that requires that we face what is going to make us uncomfortable, to be honest, with the fact that there are people out there engaging in activity that can be risky. Churches don't necessarily have to go against our moral positions, but we can make moral positions out of these experiences in terms of trying to be life-giving. And that comes with so much challenge because people have preconceived notions around homosexuality, and that's hard to change. And so then we have to sort of lead to the question of, are churches tolerant and accepting enough, or is this often unintentional stigma too much? And again, this pastor sort of acknowledged that as well, and he says, sometimes I think the faith community should play a good role, a lead role, but at the same time, you have to be careful, because you know it's a lifestyle we don't condone. But at the same time, there's a disease out there that is affecting black men. So, you know, who has the courage to stand up and say something? And they often talked about this themselves, this struggle of, do I, or does my congregation have the courage to stand up and say something? And so we have to think about just generally how we reconcile pastors' beliefs on homosexuality with their desire to engage in HIV prevention, which they really did want to do, and whether or not we can sort of come up with messages that are both based on evidence-based HIV prevention messages that are compatible with religious views, or if that's even possible, or is the stigma, this unintentional stigma, too great of a barrier? So that's sort of what the other aspects of my research are working to address and hoping to try and understand a little bit better. This research was funded by the National Institutes of Mental Health and a grant from the Center for AIDS Intervention Research at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And I would also like to acknowledge my dissertation committee and, again, the pastors and community organizations that were incredibly helpful. So, thank you.